We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Back 9 on Grant and Danny's going to be good today. Carl Hagelin of the Capitals at 12:45. Nick Sundberg in 55 minutes. He wants to be the Walter Payton Man of the Year. You can help him become the Walter Payton Man of the Year in the NFL. And Paul Stone on college football, one of our favorite experts. You hear Pete, he is in for Danny. I am Grant. Let's get to your Beltway Blitz. Craig Hoffman is our Redskins beat reporter. He is in Ashburn because there is a practice going on. Craig, sounds like Monte Nicholson's getting shut down for week 17 and therefore the season. What's wrong with him?
Yeah, he's been banged up. He's got a couple of different injuries. He's been battling the ankle going all the way back a couple of months. He's got a shoulder issue. So he has been put on IR, and a familiar face is back. Kenny Ladler, who a lot of fans loved in training camp and made some plays in the preseason, but ultimately didn't make the roster. I think he might have been cut week one. There was a lot of transactions ago. But he was sent away very early in the season, and he was brought back today. And that's in part, guys, because they had no DBs on the practice squad. They have 12 now with the signing of Ladler, and I guess they had 12 already because Nicholson goes to IR. They have 12 DBs on the roster because they just keep having to turn guys through, and they don't have time to put guys on the practice squad because there's been so many injuries.
Going to be anticipating that D. Delaney participation this week. Craig, for the Redskins, obviously Terry McLaurin doesn't go again today. Is that pretty much the final nail for him in not participating Sunday?
Probably. There's a chance they could clear him tomorrow and play him if he's feeling okay. They would love to, I think, get him the rookie records receiving-wise that he's right on the cusp of. I don't think that means too much to Terry, although I'm sure he would love to have it because he has had a historically great rookie season. And you just can't help but think that if there had been some more consistent and better quarterback play at certain stretches that – he would be well over 1,000 yards and have these records in hand by now. But, yeah, he's probably not going to play this week, and I think not practicing today is the indication of that.
We've been talking with Redskins fans about what's going to motivate them to watch, what they'll be invested in. For you, from a coverage standpoint, moving ahead, things that could actually matter come next fall, is there a list of items that are relevant next season starting in week 17, or is the team going to look so different on the sideline, on the field, that you wouldn't even think there's much carryover?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything at this point that I'm like, oh, this could change. Like, there's nothing hanging in the balance. There are things that are interesting. Like, Steven Sims is going to be a part of this team moving forward, and he has continued to really refine his skills in the slot, and I would love to see a big game from him. Adrian Peterson's continued his continued success at his age, to see how he looks in week 17 and does he get across 1,000 yards, but that's not really like a moving forward type of thing. With Haskins out, there's just not a lot where it's like, oh, what's the carryover? We kind of understand what Allen Ioannidis and Payne are, guys like Cole Holcomb, how much do they play? Sean Dion Hamilton, some of these younger linebackers, some of these younger defensive players. But I don't think there's anybody that's the obvious, like, spotlight is on him, because if he has a big game, that affects how he's viewed within this organization moving forward. So many of these young guys have played because of the injuries. And so I don't really have a lot of week 17 thoughts that are long-term, much more focused on what happens after the game, to be honest, from a coverage standpoint. And obviously it could be a monstrous 48 hours for this franchise of change from the time the game ends through Monday and maybe even into Tuesday.
Craig, Grant and I talked about this earlier. In these situations, teams can splinter, coaching staffs can splinter. What's been the key to this coaching staff and this team, for the most part, seemingly staying together and at least providing, A, competitive football, and B, we have seen some players actually make some progress despite an interim situation with the coaching staff?
So the coaching staff, the key has been, depending on how harshly you want to put it, you can say either professionalism or lying. there are fractions within this coaching staff, but they've done a great job of hiding them. They've done a great job of publicly saying the right things, and I think even putting on a good face for the players so that the players aren't out there like, yeah, our coaches, they're fighting all the time. There's been sometimes professional disagreements, which happen within any office, especially within any coaching staff. And other times I think there's like real resentment in certain factions that probably comes out within the next week or so. For the players, though, like that's been the amazing thing. Like if you're in that locker room, these dudes like each other. And they've kept fighting and they've kept practicing hard. They've kept a good vibe. You know, I think there's just a lack of cliques within the locker room that is rare within an NFL team. And I'm not even saying that the cliques are necessarily bad. Just typically it's by position group and by unit. But there's a lot of cross between offensive and defensive guys who know each other and are friends. And the specialists get along with everybody, like the ping pong table, as much as we joke about it, and especially joke about it with Russell, like guys come together at that ping pong table and it's become like a real bonding thing for this team where they're going out and being competitive every single weekend, even if they're just flat out not good enough to win. And they come up short and all these kinds of things. But I think that they've kept in general coaching staff and players, a professionalism about them this year that is impressive in spite of the record that has not produced the results that any of them want.
Thank you, Craig. One of the main players at that ping pong table is Tressway. We'll have news on Tressway coming up at the end of this segment you'll want to hear in 3 minutes. Let's go to the hockey side of things. J.J. Regan of NBCSportsWashington.com. J.J., Caps Jackets at home tonight at Capital One Arena. Why can't the Capitals beat Columbus? Why do they have so many problems with this team?
Yeah, Columbus seems to have figured a few things out about the Caps. Watching the last two games, what Columbus has been doing, they've been coming out with a very, very aggressive forecheck. They've jumped out to a first period lead, and then they've gone completely defensive. If you look at the stats, the Capitals are getting wildly outshot in the first periods, and then they're blatantly outshooting Columbus the next two periods because Columbus is keeping them outside. The Caps are frustrated and they're just flinging pucks on net. So the key is going to be overcoming that aggressive forecheck to start. It's something that we saw in the playoffs last year. They had a lot of trouble against Carolina's aggressive forecheck. So that's something that John Tortorella has taken advantage of with Columbus this year, going aggressive with the forecheck. So I talked with Lars Eller this morning about how to overcome that. You cannot turn the puck over. That's how forechecks thrive. That's how you get into trouble. You've got to keep possession of the puck, tire out the team, because it's hard to play that aggressive on the forecheck. Tire out the opponents by keeping possession of the puck, and hopefully, you know, that whole game plan goes away if the Caps score first. So they need to get on the board first tonight.
JJ, how different is just showing them Ilya Samsonov in goal? Giving them a different look. How much does that change things against the Columbus team that's obviously had some confidence against the Caps here lately?
Yeah, it's a new wrinkle. I mean, it's a tool in the tool bag for Ty Reardon to go to. All right, we haven't had much success with Braden Holtby against these guys. Let's look and see how Samsonov does. And, you know, it's a good test for him because it's a team that the Caps have had struggles against, but it's also a team that they're not full of offensive superstars, and even when they're healthy, which they're not, they're missing seven guys. They're going to miss seven regulars. Well, they were missing seven regulars. They're going to be missing eight with another guy sick today. So this is a team that likes to fling pucks on the net. It's not an overly offensively skilled team, so it'll be a good challenge for Samsonov to get a lot of volume, see if he can control these pucks, and keep Columbus to the outside, not getting those high danger chances.
JJ, thank you, pal, and looking forward to seeing all your coverage tonight from Cap One Arena.
Anytime, guys.
NBCSportsWashington.com's JJ Regan on the Beltway Blitz. You're listening to Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Speaking of the Capitals, Carl Hagelin is on the show at 12:45. Nick Sundberg is with us today at 1. Next, NFL playoff scenarios this weekend. Which games still have importance? Speaking of Sundberg, he snaps the ball to Tressway. Grant and Danny with Pete. In for Danny on a Football Friday, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. If you enjoyed the triple header of Saturday NFL action, that was all you get. We are back to the full slate on Sunday, although a bunch of games were flexed to 4:25. The wrinkle now is that we still have a Sunday Night Football game.
Yep.
critical NFC West game at 8:20 to end the season with San Francisco and Seattle. But you've got a huge batch of 4 o'clock games. Essentially, almost every game with major playoff relevance has been moved to 4, and a lot of the games that aren't as important at 1 o'clock will be played with a little bit less fanfare and intrigue and intensity. Would you, if you were the NFL, before we get into some of the scenarios and what's on the line in some of these matchups, would you do what they do now in Major League Baseball? And I believe they stole this from soccer. We're missing Soccer Dar today, so I can't say this definitively.
That's what you're right. Premier League plays all the games at the same time.
The exact same time, on the last day of the season, so that nobody knows before they play or during their game. They can watch the scoreboard if someone gets off to a quick start, is up a couple goals or something. Anything, and you have to only worry about handling your own business. I kind of wish the NFL just started every single game at 3:30 in Week 17 so that nobody got bailed out. You know, we talk about like the Eagles and the Cowboys as an example. Well, Philadelphia is playing the Giants at 4:25, and the Redskins are playing the Cowboys at the same time. If Dallas wins, they need Philly to lose to win the division. But what if the Eagles, let's say, get up to a 20-3 start after one quarter, and you know now the Eagles are going to win? Dallas suddenly doesn't have as much to play for the last couple hours of their game. Whereas if all those games started at the exact same time, and in this case, that's still the case, it makes it so that you never will ever have a game where a 1 o'clock team wins and decides the fate of a 4 o'clock team.
I mean, look, I know you've got certain cities you got to protect because of multiple teams and things of that nature, like the New Yorks especially. But, I mean, I would love it if you played, like, every game at 2 o'clock or something like that and call it, you know, Championship Sunday, just like they do in MLS and in the Premier League. I mean, you could do something like that, make every game at the same time.
So here's what's up for grabs this weekend, Pete, as we spin you around the NFL here on Grant and Danny. No Danny today, so Mr. Medhurst hanging out until 2. The Chiefs could clinch a first-round bye if they win and the Patriots lose. They have the tiebreaker. So right now, Baltimore is the one seed. They are going to be the one seed. They've locked that up. Meanwhile, though, the Patriots at 12-3, one game better than 11-4, Kansas City, play the Dolphins. Assuming New England beats Miami, they get the first-round bye. They don't have to play at home in the opening round of the playoffs. Assuming the Chargers lose to the Chiefs, though, all of a sudden that New England game matters a little bit. My guess is Kansas City wins, gets to 12-4, they beat the Chargers, but I can't see the Patriots losing to the 4-11 Dolphins.
5-0 in the division for New England, and Bill Belichick against his former protege, Brian Flores, so there'll be plenty for New England to play for. I think the Patriots will play. Miami's been very competitive here lately. They've played some really good football in November and December. I think it'll be a competitive game, but I think New England will do enough to get the victory.
Raiders 7-8 at the Broncos 6-9, one game separating a couple of the second-tier teams in the AFC West. They kick off at 4:25 our time on CBS. So the Raiders can still make the playoffs. In fact, they needed 10 things to happen over the last 2 weeks of the year. And last weekend, 6 did. So they're basically down to 4 things that need to happen now.
And they're not impossibilities at all.
No, they're not at all. So you need a Raiders win to start. They'd have to beat Denver. I would say that that is very possible, correct?
Possible. Drew Lock been playing well, though, since he was inserted at quarterback for the Broncos.
Okay, they need the Pittsburgh Steelers to lose. Pittsburgh right now, a minimal edge over the Raiders in the AFC standings. They need a Steelers loss this weekend. They play the 13-2 Baltimore Ravens. Now,
Baltimore Bob Griffin
will have Robert Griffin starting, so it's not your older brother's Ravens of this year. But still, you mean to tell me that the Steelers couldn't lose to the Ravens with Devlin Hodges and Mason Rudolph, their quarterbacks, the last few weeks? They can't even move the ball. Rudolph got hurt, so they're back to Duck Hodges the rest of the way. That could happen.
Look, Bob Griffin's going to be hungry to play well, and I think the Ravens as a team will go out there with who plays, and they will be hungry to play well. And I think as much as I love the Steelers as an AFC team, I think the Ravens will win this game and I think win it handily.
All right, so then that's one thing they need. Next thing they need is a Titans loss. Tennessee's 8-7. They play the 10-5 Houston Texans. Titans have a chance to make the playoffs still, so they need this game. The Texans don't, although Bill O'Brien is saying they're going to play to win. They owe it essentially to their division and to the league or something ridiculous like that. But The Titans losing to a 10-win Texans team isn't crazy. I happen to think Tennessee will win that game, but that's not outrageous for the Raiders to need that.
Here's what Houston needs to win, though. In that 4-5 area there, I mean, you know, I guess technically they could get up to Kansas City if Kansas City were to lose. But still in all, I mean, if you're the Houston Texans, they're going to play to win, I think, for at least most of the game. I don't know if Deshaun Watson goes all four quarters in the contest, but the Titans are the ones that are really in the driver's seat because if they win, they're in, period.
Here's the last of the four things for the Raiders to make the playoffs. They need the Colts to beat the Jaguars, which
that
I think
should happen,
right? Jacksonville at home is 5-10, Indianapolis 7-8. So we're talking about something we think will happen, Baltimore beating Pittsburgh, something we think will happen, the Colts beating the Jaguars. The only thing we don't really know is going to happen with any confidence is the Titans
right.
beating
the Texans.
That's
the toughest transaction, I think, of the weekend for them.
But to have had to need 10 things and now four, and we're saying three probably happen, the Raiders do not count
them out.
I would love
to see it happen, to be honest with you. I would love to see John Gruden sneak his way into the back end of the playoffs, even though he'll get clubbed by the Chiefs probably in the first round.
The Steelers have a bunch of ways to get in. They play the Ravens. We talked about that. 8-7 Pittsburgh trying to get to 9-7. 13-2 Baltimore, the one seed. CBS kickoff 4:25 in Baltimore.
Quack, quack.
Steelers get in with a win and a Tennessee loss or tie, a win and a Tennessee loss, or a Titans loss plus a couple of other things, including the Colts and the Raiders losing. Bottom line is, Steelers win, they're going to be in pretty good shape.
Well, I mean, they still need that Titans loss against the Texans, but...
They only need one thing
to happen, whereas the Raiders still need a combination of things to happen.
Yeah, the Titans are the only team that controls their own destiny in the pack. If they win, they're in, whereas the Steelers need to win and get the loss from Tennessee. In the NFC, not a whole lot going on here. Saints have won the NFC South. Packers have already won their division. Vikings are in. 49ers have gotten to the top of the conference, but we've got some positioning to be determined in the NFC. The Cowboys can clinch the NFC East in their game against the Redskins if they win and the Eagles lose. Meanwhile, Philly just has to beat the Giants and they win, or even if they lose, if Dallas loses, they also get in. The Green Bay Packers clinch a first-round bye if they win. They'll also get a bye if they lose and the Saints lose. I think Green Bay probably does beat Detroit 3-11-1, 1 o'clock game on Fox, and they are the 2 seed in the NFC.
How about San Francisco, by the way? They beat both Green Bay and New Orleans, which is why they're at the top of that 12-3 tiebreaker right now. Kudos to Kyle Shanahan for the job done there. I think Green Bay beats Detroit. So, unfortunately for the Saints, you know, you win, big deal. You're still going to be the 3 seed and playing that opening week. The only question is, what happens at the bottom of the 5-6 spot? What if Seattle and Minnesota both end up at 11-5?
Minnesota has clinched, obviously, and at that point, you go to the tiebreaker. Seattle clinches the NFC West still with a win over the San Francisco 49ers in a first-round bye if they get the win and the Packers lose. So it's more positioning than normal, since we know in the NFC everyone that's getting in. There's only one spot up for grabs in the AFC. Here's the question, though, for you guys next, and Pete, we can answer this as well. You get to watch one game in each conference this weekend. Which one are you choosing on the Week 17 slate? 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny on this Football Friday. We'll talk to Carl Hagelin coming up at 1245. Football Friday on Grant and Danny with Pete in for Danny today, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. We've got the Military Bowl on in studio here, North Carolina leading Temple early on. I was talking about this with Danny last week. Even though I'm just kind of an average college football fan, I'm not like you where you're out calling games and, you know, the starting left guard of a bunch of these teams, Pete. I love when we get to bowl season and there's just always a game on. I'll throw my TV on ESPN or something and just leave it on all day. And it feels like the start of the college basketball season where you get the 24-hour marathon games. There's always college football on, basically from right now until after New Year's. It's a great time of the year sports-wise because of that. And I don't have a horse in the race with Temple or North Carolina, I don't care at all. Same thing last night with the Miami game. I don't care about that game. But I'm sitting there and I'm glued to it. I got to run out of the house to go pick something up and I'm listening to it on the radio. It's just football, man. You can't beat it.
You have a reasonable right to be entertained when you watch those games. I feel bad for you because Louisiana Tech Miami was not entertaining, unlike Eastern Michigan Pitt, which turned out to be a very exciting game last night with Pitt winning by a score of 34-30. It is unbelievable. Wes Durham and I talked about this yesterday. It's unbelievable what's happened in Miami. I mean,
they're look, terrible.
Long gone are the days of Michael Irvin and all those guys and how cocky and good they play. But right now, they've lost to two mediocre, you know, in the grand scheme of college football, G5 teams, Louisiana Tech and Florida International. Lost to Duke in that time. Duke's 5-7. So they've lost three in a row to end the season. They fired their offensive coordinator this morning. They've been terrible on offense. They can't figure it out. And, you know, I wonder about Manny Diaz, long range as the head coach there. By the way, for North Carolina in this game, Joshua Izudu, starting left guard for the Tar Heels.
There you go. Yes, absolutely.
Deleted 7-0, by the way, over Temple.
This is at Naval Academy.
It is. You know, Navy Marine well. Corps Memorial Stadium. Love it.
So we said before the break, we wanted to know which of the games this weekend you guys cared the most about. I want one in the NFC, one in the AFC that you're potentially going to be glued to. 800-636-1067. I only think there's one answer in the NFC. The best game by far is 49ers-Seahawks.
Yes.
That 8:20 kickoff, primetime, Sunday night football, football night in America, Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth, is for the NFC West title. Because remember, even though Seattle comes in a game down, they have the tiebreaker. If they win this game, they will have swept San Francisco. And at 12-4, they will leap from the wild card on the road right now as the 5 seed to a first round bye and the number 1 seed overall based on some of the tiebreaking metrics and strength of schedule and things. So there's literally everything on the line for them as far as the playoffs are concerned. Meanwhile, San Francisco still has a chance to be the 1 seed with a win, or they would fall to the 5 seed. If they lose. Now, the only good news for the loser of 49ers Seahawks is that your consolation prize, even if you don't win the division, normally it would be a devastating situation because you've got to go to a division winner as a wild card team. You are at Dallas next week. So,
or Philadelphia.
Or Philadelphia, right. And right now it would actually probably be Philadelphia. So I guess I should lead with you're at the Eagles. But you're at the division championship winner of the NFC East. So you're at Lincoln Financial Field or Dallas, one way or the other, depending on what happens this weekend. You're winning that game, I would say. You're not going to walk in there and roll out the football and just walk away from the Eagles with a 27-7 win or something. But you're better than those teams. So you don't get a bye, but you get about an easy a road playoff game as could be.
It would be interesting, though, Grant, with San Francisco all of a sudden in the spotlight, how they would play on the road. We've seen teams like that. All of a sudden, the Schwingus gets a little tighter during the playoffs and during the postseason, especially with some pedigree on that Philadelphia side. They got some guys that have played in some of these games. I don't think Philadelphia would be a cakewalk for a team like San Francisco just because it would be the first playoff game for a lot of those guys if that's the way things shake out. But without question, if you lose, you're devastated because you didn't win the division, and then all of a sudden you got to turn around and play the next week. I just think that's a come cross country for either one of those teams to play, especially if it's Philadelphia. Some dynamics there that don't add up nicely for the team that loses out in that Seahawks 49ers scenario.
I'm debating between two AFC games. I think there are way more options for this question. You know, which AFC game would you have to watch this weekend? And the two that I've got teed up here are Titans-Texans at 425. 8-7 Tennessee with a win gets the final playoff spot, the second wild card spot in the conference. And they would be beating their division champions in the South, the Texans. But the other game is Steelers-Ravens yes. in Baltimore. For this reason, Pittsburgh could make the playoffs. They win, the Titans lose. But Robert Griffin is starting for Baltimore. Right. How is that not something that you'd want to see if you're a longtime Redskins fan and you were around for 2012. He's going to be operating the Lamar Jackson quarterback run-heavy offense that the Ravens have been running all year long. He is, you'd have to think, a comparable passer to Lamar Jackson. who's been throwing all year long to tight ends and wide open receivers like Griffin did back in 2012. Jackson's had an incredible campaign. He will be the MVP award winner despite having played in just 15 games. But on top of that, you get to watch Griffin run around a little bit. Does he make the right decisions and get down and get out of bounds? We've seen him for a series here, a series there. You always see the tweets go out from Redskins fans, Griffin's in the game, and you get three, four snaps, and it's a couple handoffs, and then the game ends. This is four quarters of Robert Griffin, though. I think this will be fun to watch, and there is some playoff relevance to it with the Steelers. Plus, we'll get to see that Ravens defense, which is excellent, and you see how much of this is Lamar Jackson, how much of this is scheme.
It's a terrific rivalry right now, the NFL Ravens-Steelers, first of all. The guys that will be playing for either side will play hard because those two teams really don't like each other, competing with each other. So the one team's going to be hungry for a win. I do not believe Robert will run anywhere near as much as Lamar has for the Ravens. And I think Robert will, even though I think it'll be a run-heavy offense with Gus Edwards, because Mark Ingram's not going to play this weekend either. I think you're going to get a lot of Gus Edwards. But I think you're going to get a lot of Robert doing some fundamental, you know, mid-range stuff in terms of the passing game. Maybe take a couple of deep shots if they're available out there. But I don't think we're going to see Robert run anywhere near as much as Lamar Jackson. But that game means something to the Steelers. Therefore, I think it will mean something to the Ravens who do play in the contest. And I would agree with you, that game, in addition to Texans-Titans, which I don't think is going to be a very aesthetically pleasing game to watch. But I think that's obviously a game that carries a lot of cachet for both teams.
I'm not going to go as far as to say that more people in D.C. will watch Ravens-Steelers than Redskins-Cowboys. Because it's the Redskins and the Cowboys, number one, and there are so many Dallas fans in this town, and that team needs this game. But I'll bet you a huge amount of Redskins fans in this lost season will find themselves navigating over to Ravens-Steelers to watch Griffin. People who loved the 2012 Redskins season, if you're my age, that was arguably the greatest Redskins year of your lifetime. And Griffin was obviously at the controls of that. Doesn't mean that you wanted them to keep him, or doesn't mean that you thought they should have given him another couple of years. It's just a chance to reminisce a bit. It's a guy that you rooted for at one point, you get to watch again. There shouldn't be any ill will toward him necessarily. But he's got an opportunity to start, and I'll bet you a lot of people in D.C. will be tuned in.
Do we get the WUSA 9 versus Fox 5 head up with this game?
I don't know how we wouldn't. I mean, they're both at 425. Redskins will be on Fox. Unless CBS is doing something wacky, I think they would have Steelers-Ravens at 425 this weekend.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, that would be the only thing. If it's head up against each other, then you would have a true way to,
right,
you know,
but if it was Redskins Eagles or Redskins Giants, let's say, maybe that's even better. Redskins Giants this weekend compared to last weekend, there's a chance I think that Ravens Steelers game could rival it. But you've got NFC East division championship relevance in the game. And again, there's just so many.
In fact, Channel
9's
got the doubleheader week this week. So CBS has doubleheaders. So
nice.
Channel 9 is going to have two games.
Who's their 1 o'clock game?
It doesn't say. It says teams to be announced. But they're going to have a 1 o'clock game and a 4:25 game.
It's not the AFC slate's not very good early. I'll bet you we would either get Dolphins Patriots or we might get Jets Bills in that 1 o'clock window.
I would say Dolphins Patriots.
You got New England.
Patriots numbers all across TV this year have been excellent.
Grant and Danny with Pete in for Danny on the Fan. Next, Carl Hagelin of the Capitals. They're getting ready for the Columbus Blue Jackets, a home game tonight at Capital One Arena. Let's ask Hagelin why they have so many issues beating Columbus. You're locked into the Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Bay Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Bad news for the Redskins is it is official. Terry McLaurin has been ruled out of Sunday's game in Dallas, meaning he will come up 7 yards shy of Gary Clark's 1985 franchise record for receiving yards in a rookie season. More on that next hour. We'll also be joined by Nick Sundberg of the Skins, who's gunning to be the Walter Payton Man of the Year, coming up in about 13 minutes at 1 o'clock. But right now, our buddy Carl Hagelin is presented by FH for Plumbing, Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical. He joins us each and every week on G&D to talk Caps hockey. Carl, Columbus tonight, the Blue Jackets have been an absolute pain in your guys' butts. What do you think they do different than some teams, or strategically, schematically, what have they done that's given you guys some fits here lately?
Well, I think it's hard to say, but if you look at the two games, it's I think it's been our first period that's been the issue. They're going to come hard. They get pucks deep, and they try to, run our defensemen as much as possible. And I think we've been we haven't been up for the games, to be honest, the first 20 minutes. But then we start going in the second and the third. But it's been too late because their goal has been pretty good as well. So I think we just need to get off to a good start, play quick early on, and not give them that. That confidence that they can play with the puck in our D zone.
Carl, how much changes from what you all have as your base philosophy, depending on who the opponent is, especially like a Columbus or like a Boston, right, who you've seen a lot here lately?
Not a lot. I think we try to, play within our structure and our system. It doesn't really matter who we play against. We believe a lot in, what we do, and if we execute and do everything we can to, our full potential, we're a really good team. But somehow we haven't had, had the starts we needed against Columbus so far. So the good thing is for us, we know we're going to be ready tonight. We know we're going to have a good start. So if we can do that, we're going to have a good chance.
Carl Hagelin's with us each and every week on Grant and Danny. If you're a Caps fan, it's must listen. They're the number one team in the sport. 57 points is 3 more than anybody in hockey. St. Louis is second, 4 more than Boston, anybody in the Eastern Conference. Now, you guys have played 38 games, and you've lost just 7 times in regulation. This has been unbelievable. But I am curious, after that Bruins game, what does it get harder to every single game bring the same energy as if it's important? Like in the NBA, just as an example, there are nights where the really good teams just don't show up, and they'll lose by 16 to some of the worst teams in the sport, and we just know that's quote-unquote NBA basketball. Right. Is it the same in hockey where there's just going to be a night inevitably where you guys, quote unquote, don't have it, or you're just kind of out there skating around because you've built up such a lead?
I think there's a lot of times during the year when you play 3 games in 4 nights, and there might be certain times there where you, I don't think it matters where you are in the standings. I think some nights you just don't have it. And those are the nights where you need to just rely on playing well defensively and kind of get out of the first period with a tie, 0-0 or something like that. And I think that Boston game was one of them. We came out, we're a little sloppy, and we gave them a chance to get on the power play, I think 3 times in the first period. And those are the little things that maybe when you're not ready, you don't, you kind of give those things up, which you shouldn't. And it happens sometimes when you play so many games that we do, and it's probably the same in the NBA, but I wouldn't say our record has anything to do with it.
Carl, you guys have been on the road a lot too, especially since you came back from injury. You guys have played a ton of road games. The fact that this week gives you all kind of a chance to decompress a little bit and reset, obviously playing in front of the home folks tonight, how much does this little break here with a holiday give you all a chance to kind of reset things and rejuvenate and recover a little bit?
No, I love it. I think most guys do too. It's one of those things where you get to spend time with family and friends, and you just get some new energy. you get away from the game for a little bit and realize, you know, day three there, you realize how much you want to get back on the ice and play games again. And usually you feel better the second half of the year. And, you know, this is when the fun starts.
What was your holiday break like? I mean, how much friends and family did you have around? Did you guys do any kind of a big meal or anything? What was it like?
Yeah, so in Sweden, you usually celebrate on the 24th. That's a big day. I had my in-laws in town, so it was my wife's mom and dad and her sister's boyfriend. So they did most of the cooking, a lot of traditional Swedish food. And then the 24th, we actually met up with our neighbors for a little bit, played some street hockey, which was fun. And then 25th, we just went downtown and walked around a little bit, which was pretty nice too, because there's no one down there for once. and then yesterday, we had like a little family skate for anyone who wanted to come in with their kids and family here at Kettler, and that was cool too. My daughter didn't like being on the ice though, so we were only here for 10 minutes, but it was definitely nice just to get away and spend time and eat some really good food and kind of get away from the game for 2 or 3 days there.
That's awesome for the family skate. I want to go back though. You mentioned street hockey with neighbors. You weren't playing, right? Were you watching, or what was that like?
I went out there and took a couple of slap shots. It was fun.
So is this like buddies, just people that live on your street and they know you as Carl Hagelin of the Capitals, or are they just like, there's like a good looking dude with long locks? Who's
no, they knew I was. I know. They're my neighbors. So they're good people. And they have three sons actually, and two of them play hockey. And the third one is about to start, I think. So they were out playing a little bit, and I said, I'll come join them to get some fresh air too.
So you just went out and played with the kids. That's great. How long were you out there? Were you scoring any goals on them?
I was scoring some goals, so maybe that gives me some confidence move forward. One of them was playing goalie, so but no, it was great. I remember myself just being out on you know, Christmas Eve back in the days playing some street hockey. So when they said they were going to be out there, I said I'll stop by for 5 to 10, but it turned out to be 35-40 minutes.
Carl, what's the go-to Swedish food when the family comes to town like that?
We like to cure our own salmon, and then we have like pickled herring, ham, potatoes, a lot of different cheeses, some mini hot dogs. It's a big spread, that's for sure.
If I'm you, I'm just eating everything in sight, and then I eat till I basically am uncomfortable and or on the verge of getting sick. Like, you've got a game coming up, so how do you go about keeping yourself ready to play Columbus?
I think, the good thing is that we do all the eating on the 24th, and that's 3 days before our game, so it doesn't really matter. I think that I just eat whatever's in front of me. I got pretty good and fast metabolism, so that's usually no problem for me.
All right, Carl, appreciate the time. Best of luck tonight against the Blue Jackets.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you. There's Carl Hagelin. Love having him on Grant and Danny. He is tremendous, and we're lucky that he's our weekly guest from the Caps.
By the way, no Cam Atkinson tonight for the Blue Jackets, placed on IR with an ankle injury.
They're down 8 players right now in their season. Nick Sundberg starts our final hour next. He is trying to become the Walter Payton Man of the Year. Part of the vote is based on fans and who they elect on social media with retweets and hashtags. He is, of 32 players, last I saw, up to 2nd based on the support of Redskins fans. We'll talk to him about that next right here on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.